Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Learn to Love podcast, your guide to everything love, sex, intimacy, and relationships. Each week, your host, Zach Beach, interviews new experts on love, including couples therapists, relationship coaches, sex educators, and best-selling authors. Learn the best tips and cutting-edge wisdom to better love yourself, others, and the world. Thanks so much for joining us. We hope you enjoy the show.
Hello, beautiful souls. I'm so positively delighted that you could join us on the Learn to Love podcast. I am your host, Zach Beach, and I'm excited to introduce our guest for today's episode, Orisha Smolarski. Orisha Smolarski is a licensed marriage and family therapist, certified co-parenting coach, and mediator with a clinical practice in Los Angeles, California. She specializes in working with co-parents, couples, and individuals. For more than 10 years, she has drawn on attachment theory and other modalities to help clients navigate their emotional whirlwinds and create a secure co-parenting family. She came on to the show to talk about her book, Cooperative Co-Parenting for Secure Kids, the Attachment Theory Guide to Raising Kids in Two Homes. As a mom and co-parent herself, she is very familiar with the challenges faced by parents raising kids in two households. It's an incredible topic that we haven't covered yet, so I was so excited to dive in with her on loving our kids even through the pain of separation. So without further ado, let's begin. Hello, Orisha. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Zach. Thanks for having me.
How are you today?
I'm well, just enjoying the sunshine from the inside.
That's true. Even when the skies are cloudy, we still have light in our heart that we can tune into.
Oh, that's sweet. I like that.
So our topic for today is on security after separation. We'll be talking all about your book. And I want to read the title here, Cooperative Co-Parenting for Secure Kids, the Attachment Theory Guide to Raising Kids in Two Homes. And what brought you to write this book?
Well, through my own experience, you know, when my co-parent and I decided to start to end our marriage, obviously we were like, what do we do? How do I do this? My emotions were on full display, so were his. And, you know, I could see that my kid was struggling. And as a therapist, I was like, I got to do something about this. You know, there must be a better way. You know, I'd heard about, you know, divorce is bad for kids. And of course, I didn't want our divorce to affect her negatively. And, you know, through my own research, I was like, there has to be a way to do this in such a way that our child can still feel secure in her world, even in two homes. And so, you know, this was kind of the beginning of my journey. Was I looked on the internet and was like, how do I do this? You know, are there any books on how to be in this kind of relationship? Because, you know, a co-parenting relationship is just as real as a romantic one or a friendship or dating. And I couldn't find anything that was helpful to me. So I was like, well, maybe I should, you know, write this myself. But I started to apply, you know, a lot of the strategies that I, you know, about relationships and attachment theory to my own co-parenting relationship. And I started to see that it really was beneficial. And we moved from being more tension and full of conflict to more cooperation. And so of course, then we saw the benefits to my kid and she got back to being her happy and, you know, secure self. And so that's fundamentally, you know, in talking about this with coworkers and with friends, they were like, you got to put this down because if I needed this information, most likely other people do as well. And so that was kind of like the birth story of the book was how can I share my own experience, my own expertise with attachment theory and fundamentally, you know, focus it on what we really want to do most, which is make sure that our kids thrive and feel secure, even in two homes. And so that's where Cooperative Co-Parenting for Secure Kids came from.
Wonderful. Sounds like a very personal journey. So you mentioned that you didn't find like books on it. So you had to write your own. And is the wisdom in the book from your own experience of working with your own clients? Or was there other research that you found in the world to bring into kind of like the first book on the topic?
Well, of course, I relied heavily on, you know, attachment theory research. So the framework of the book is based on what creates and what helps children feel secure And how can we as adults, as parents, nurture and create the secure base, a secure haven, even into homes? So the research really is based on, you know, attachment theory, which is not mine, you know, John Bowlby and Mary Ainsworth and a lot of others. And so I really relied heavily on that as, and then started to apply all this with my clients and with my co-parenting teams, as well as with my own co-parenting relationship. And so it's a combination both of research as well as experiential learning and observation.
So this next question of mine, it comes from a really good place. And even if you don't want to answer it, we can 100% cut it out. Because I do believe, you know, we don't need to measure the success of a relationship by duration. And the end of a relationship doesn't in any way mean a failure. And that being said, you know, you've counseled couples, you know about attachment theory, you probably know all the best communication tips for a successful relationship. And yet, you still had to go through this reality of a divorce.
Yeah. And that was one of the big shame pieces that I experienced, right? It was like, here I am. I'm supposed to know how to do all this. And yet I couldn't keep my relationship together. What does this mean about me as a therapist? What does this mean about me as a person? And so I had to move past that and realize that, you know, it takes two for one to be in a relationship. And, you know, as we're putting this in sort of the realm of attachment theory science, a relationship that's, you know, romantic is based upon getting your needs met mutually in a relationship. A co-parenting relationship is just about focusing on the needs of the kid and nurturing a secure relationship with the child. So actually, you know, you can end a relationship because it's no longer working for you, or because there are betrayals, or because there are, you know, mental health issues, or, and I'm not saying any, this was in my own story, some of it, but I think it's, you know, in terms of reaching to a broader audience, it's about understanding that even if you yourself think that you have more of a secure attachment style, your partner may not, or they may bring in certain challenges that just cannot be overcome together. And so, you know, my journey towards the end of the relationship really was about realizing that we were better off not together than, you know, being married together. And I don't know if I want to go into all of the details because I don't think that's really what's helpful, but I think it's more about how we chose to, you know, continue that parenting part of our relationship together. And that's what was fundamental. And that we chose to end the relationship that was no longer meeting each other's needs. I mean, we grew apart, let's just say, you know, and I think that a lot of couples do grow apart. And there are lots of factors that contribute to that. And so the key here for us was like, and for me was, how can we make sure that my daughter still has her dad in her life and that I still have her dad in her life? And it was no longer about the two of us. It was no longer about what went wrong and what happened. It took a while to get there, a lot of healing, but really refocusing on her and what was in her best interest and prioritizing her needs.
I really appreciate you sharing that because, you know, I even had a guest recently and they were like, you know, when you're having an argument with a partner, you got to know when to let go, right? Do you want to be right? Do you want to be happy kind of idea?
And oh, yeah.
You know, it does take maturity and understanding and even a willingness to let go to recognize that perhaps the relationship that you're in isn't serving both of you, and perhaps separating the romantic piece but keeping together the parenting piece is the best route forward for all the parties involved.
Yeah. And, you know, realizing, and I think this is a big piece for a lot of people, is that no matter how much we wish and we want our partner to be different from who they are, we can't change them. And so letting go of that relationship and releasing yourself from it, and even releasing them from, you know, trying to be that person for you, can be the best thing forward. And I think a lot of people stay stuck in a relationship that they wish looked different or was different. And actually, it may be better to let it go, like what your previous guest said, let it go, so that you can find other partners that may be able to meet your needs and create more safety and security that you want. And that is also a really good, you know, message and modeling that you're showing your kids, that, like, first of all, we may not have just one soulmate, and that love can change, and that, you know, romantic love can change. Actually, a parent and a child love doesn't, and that you have choice. And if something isn't healthy, that it's okay to leave, and to make a decision that actually creates a better outcome for everybody.
Yeah, I love that. It can be empowering, right?
It can be empowering.
That you are in charge of your own destiny and your own life, and life circumstances can change, and you can make the best choices that you can for yourself.
Absolutely.
So it's interesting hearing you talk about the kind of conversations that do happen with kids when we're going through such a challenging transition. And I recently attended a talk where the professor said that all children are narcissists. And I was like, what? And he went on to explain that they interpret everything through a personal lens, meaning that if parents are fighting, if they're getting divorced, they don't think, oh, clearly they grew apart over many years. They think, I'm wrong. Something's wrong with me. You know, you're 5 years old drinking a juice box, but you still have the thought, I'm creating the conflict in this marriage that I'm observing. And I'm curious if you agree with this sentiment, if you've also found that children do put the blame on themselves for their parents' own conflicts.
Yeah. I think that for many children, you know, I would, you know, absolutely agree that children are self-oriented. So they put themselves in the center of their world. And so, you know, when they see that their parents are fighting and maybe hear their name coming up in the fight, they may, oh, it's because of me. They're fighting because I didn't clean my room, or because of their disagreement on what school I should go to, or, you know, or they see their parents stressing out a lot, especially around parenting issues, you know, getting out of the house, making dinner, you know, all the things that as parents one can relate to. It's stressful. So the kid may internalize and say, well, if it wasn't because of me, if I wasn't here, then maybe my parents wouldn't be so stressed out and they wouldn't be fighting so much, and maybe they wouldn't be separating if they didn't have to be so stressed out about me and parenting and all of that. And so that's sometimes where that blame can come from. And so it's really important when parents talk to their kids about the separation, about the divorce, that they really emphasize that there's nothing that the child can do to change or fix it, that it really is an adult issue between adults, that romantic love is very different. It can change, and it's very different from the love between a parent and a child, which never changes. And that, you know, the best thing that came out of the marriage was them, and they wouldn't change that in a heartbeat, and that they can continue to love and be a family together, even if it has changed. And so to really continue to take that burden off the child that they may be fantasizing about, you know, and like, oh, maybe if it's because of me, then I can change and fix it, and maybe I can get them back together. So you want to relieve that responsibility from the child, also by not putting them in roles that they shouldn't be in, you know, by not putting them in the middle or feeling responsible for your feelings, or hearing that, you know, or, you know, hearing that it was because of dad who did X, Y, and Z that we're breaking up, or maybe mom is the one who instigated it. All of that also creates a lot of confusion and guilt for the child, because again, they're like, wait, so now I have to take sides. I want to protect the person who's just been left. And also I love my other parent, so, but I'm really mad at them. And so that also creates a lot of that internal conflict within themselves. So the key here is really like, let your child, you know, love both of you by alleviating any of this kind of guilt or stress that they may feel or take on.
I love that. Telling your child that the best thing that came out of your marriage is them.
Yes.
That's beautiful.
Over and over again. Yeah.
I also love reframing the narcissist to self-oriented. That's really good framework.
I tend to use that phrase even for adults. I think it lands way better.
So our topic is based around building a secure attachment in divorced parenting. But let's just talk about the general principles that all parents can apply, whether they're together, whether they're apart, in terms of, we've talked a little bit about attachment theory on the podcast. We've had a few episodes specifically dedicated to it, so we don't have to go super into the background of it. So as a parent, I want my child to be securely attached. And maybe even I recognize I'm XYZ. I'm anxious, you know, the other parent's avoidant. What are some of the basic principles that I can bring into my parenting?
Yeah. So secure attachment is based on, as you listeners have already learned, you know, the quality of the relationship between the parent and the child. So there are two things that we can look at, you know, in a two home family system is, what are the structures that me and my co-parent can create to help nurture this safe haven for our child, even in two homes? What, you know, so the question to ask yourself is, what do I want my child to experience? And how can me as a parent in my home support that? And how can we between our two homes support that? And so, you know, it's important to think about that secure attachment is based on having, you know, that quality time, connection, emotional attunement with your child in your own home, where they feel like they can go to you and that you can hold space for their emotions, where their emotions aren't going to, you know, activate you and make you angry, or that they don't have to like caretake your stuff, your emotions, your needs. Instead, that they know that you can handle their emotions. When you create these intentional connection times where you're playing with your kid or engaging with them every day on the days that you have them in your own home, that helps them feel seen. It helps them feel like my parent is interested in me. And this allows them to truly feel felt and understood. And that also establishes this security with that parent. They want to make sure that, you know, you want to make sure that you're helping them regulate their emotions. As a parent, we are, in a way, their co-regulators. They're leaning on our calm in order to find their own calm. And it doesn't mean we always are calm. So the key to this is repair. Right? Like sometimes we're not always calm. Sometimes we yell or we snap. Like that's real. So it's not about being the perfect parent, because that isn't what creates secure attachment. It's about being, showing up, being emotionally and physically present, and being able to repair when there are ruptures and when you do make a mistake. And that's how, you know, children learn to feel, and they feel, you know, learn to feel that safety, and that they can really count on and rely on their caregivers to be there. Even if there are, you know, ruptures, they know they have that secure base to keep coming back to, you know, as they navigate the world.
I love that. It's not about being the perfect parent. It's about showing up.
Yes.
And I love your principles: quality time, connection, emotional attunement, and the ability to hold space for emotions.
One of the key things that I always tell my co-parents is being with is enough. Even if you have nothing to say, when your kid is, you know, throwing a fit, be with them just quietly. And then the child is like, my parent can handle this. They know how to, they can just be present with me. I don't have to do anything. They're not trying to fix it or make it go away or, you know, change my emotion. They're just here with me. And that's like the fundamental key around presence, is being with. So two words that are easy to remember.
You know, as a small aside, I'm very curious your opinion on screens. You know, the family's out at Applebee's and kids are acting up. So here's a nice screen for you to get lost in. What's your opinion on, you know, screen time and how that might even get in the way of everything that we're currently talking about?
This is a huge topic that I think every parenting expert is talking about, because it's becoming a huge issue. I think that limited amount of screen time is okay. You know, there's research that shows that a lot of screen time can actually cause a lot of dysregulation for your child. So that's something to be aware of, having, you know, consistent, you know, limits around it that you start off early on so that your kid is, you know, used to it is definitely something that I would recommend. You know, there's lots of different kinds of screen time. There's social media, there's TV, there's, you know, so this is a huge topic that, you know, I'm sure could be just one podcast or five podcasts in of itself. But so I think that, you know, in the context of co-parenting, this comes up so much because people do have different perspectives on what's okay, what's not okay, or they need it for different reasons. If there are a lot of kids, or if, you know, one of the parents really needs it more than the other for babysitting time. So it's really about how you set those consistent boundaries around it for your kid, and being aware that they're, you know, relying on it too much can actually be part of the reason why your kid may be struggling with self-regulation, and to check in with that and to be aware of what they're watching and help them understand what they're watching. So it's a big topic.
It is. But I appreciate your answer. I'm sure you know divorces don't happen instantly. Usually they are the result of growing apart or perhaps increasing conflict and I'll just say like toxicity in the relationship. So I'm almost curious, like, if the attachment pattern is already somewhat set in the child. For example, if I got divorced after 5 years of conflict, my kid is now 8 years old. Is their attachment pattern already set?
Yeah. This is such a good question because I think it comes up, it reflects on a lot of the fear that parents have. Either did I mess up my kid because I was in a toxic marriage, or am I messing up my kid now because of the divorce? And I always emphasize that a child's and even ours attachment style is on a continuum, and that the more awareness that we have in terms of our own attachment styles and how that contributes to the way that we parent, and how we can start to heal ourselves, we can then start to shift the ways that we can be more present and more attuned and more connected to our kid. And often that the separation, the divorce can offer more opportunity for that, more calm and spaces where you can actually create more of a secure attachment with your child because you're not dysregulated all the time because of the toxicity in the marriage. And so, you know, the good news is that our brains, you know, because of our brain's natural plasticity, as parents, we have the ability to nurture and shape our kids, you know, healthier development and patterns of behavior and attachment patterns from the moment that you decide to be, you know, be more of a present parent. And I think that, so it's not about looking at yourself as like, oh my God, I'm a bad parent and go into a shame spiral, but instead of, wait a minute, there is something I can do right now today to start shifting that, and your child will follow suit. They will start to feel that security. They will start healing. They will feel that repair, because in a way, that's the biggest repair that you can do, which is, you know what? I wasn't able to be so present with you back then. Or sometimes I got really, you know, angry at you, and I'm really sorry for that. Now, this is how I can show up for you in this way. You know, I'm here. I can hold your emotions. I mean, you're not going to say those specific words, but it depends on the age of your kid. Is like, you can share with me what you're feeling. It's more about what you do than what you say, and your kids will feel it. And they will move towards more security as well if you engage more in that sort of, you know, quality time, more connection time, all of those, you know, things that we talked about in the other question around how do I create more secure attachment with my child. So no, you didn't mess up your kid, and you can change that relationship today. You can start.
I love that. I love seeing that divorce can be an opportunity to create a secure attachment, or just to bring our child into a more calm, safe, regulated environment than the marriage that was just causing conflict for them.
Yeah. I actually hear, and I hear this more often from dads, is that they're able to now, because of the separation, because the roles now are like, I have to be mom and dad at the same time in my home, they actually have more quality time with their kids, and they really enjoy that. And so not only does a divorce potentially offer like more opportunity for calm and ease, but also for more time and more quality time, which is actually what's most important for one of the parents who couldn't do that necessarily in the marriage.
You know, real quick before we shift to the next topic, because you've mentioned quality time a number of times.
Yeah.
And I do, you know, I think of that as one of like the love languages and how important it is for romantic relationships. And what does quality time, you know, with a little one look like?
Yeah, that's where, you know, it's about uninterrupted, engaged, where you really are focusing on the interest of the child. You know, you put all the gadgets away. There are no distractions. It's really more about being receptive to what's going on, where you're engaging with your child. That's quality time versus quantity. And we talk about this a lot in the co-parenting world and divorce world, because people fight so much about fair 50-50, but yet it's sometimes 50-50, but you know, like you said before, a lot of the times the parent isn't present or they're working part of the time. And it's really about, you know, how can we create schedules where the kid feels that they are being engaged with in this quality, like with substance, where they're feeling seen, heard, understood, where they have, you know, a present caregiver. And so that's why I, you know, talk a lot about that quality. And also the quality of the relationship is what creates security, how we show up, not just being there, cooking food and, you know, being there. It's about the way in which we are there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like it's more than just being there, like around. It's about being with, as you mentioned before. Being yes. with is enough, but being with means with, not with. Next to or around.
Exactly. Exactly.
So I love in your book, you offer the six C's of cooperative co-parenting. We have commitment, collaboration, clarity, consistency, connection, and community. So let's go into the very first step, commitment, which I feel like might be the most challenging step. So for example, my ex-spouse is a jerk and a bad parent, and I don't even want to be in the same room as them. How do I get them on board?
Right. So first I want to just frame commitment as a commitment to your co-parenting team is actually a commitment to your child. And if co-parents can see that it's no longer about committing to your co-parent, it's no longer about each other, it's no longer about your co-parent being a jerk or you don't like the way that they, you know, parent or all of that. It's no longer about who's right or wrong. It's just about how can you guys parent together? And just having that shift of definition is often like that catalyst of like, oh, right. Okay. So I talk a lot with co-parents on, you know, understanding how, you know, when you think, oh, my parent's a bad parent, you know, or my partner is a bad parent and they're a total jerk, that's actually keeping them stuck in the past relationship. That's keeping the emotional sort of, you know, cables still engaged with each other that they're bringing into the co-parenting relationship. So one of the first things is really to help the co-parents understand that they are no longer each other's go-to people. They are no longer each other's attachment figures, the people to meet their needs, to acknowledge them, to, you know, be seen and to be, you know, like seen as worthy or not a failure. All those things that may have come up that they needed to have been met within their romantic relationship, that's no longer their role. And so we have to unplug those. And that's, you know, the first step that has to happen is really creating this intentional goodbye where they say goodbye to getting all of those needs met from their ex who no longer holds the role of attachment figure. And then to say hello to all of, you know, the things that they value about them as a parent, because that's the one piece that still remains is just them being parents together and co-parenting together. And so from there, then they can start to create the focus on the child. So in a way, it's like flipping the script. Like it's no longer about the parents surviving and being a couple together. It's now just about the child thriving. And that within each home, they have to create that, you know, secure relationship with the child. And so that can really help shift their mindset from us, the adults, to now our job is just to create this foundation that allows the child to feel secure, right? Which is based on the six C's. And that's our focus. So that's the idea of commitment is really, you know, getting the child to have that sense that they haven't lost a parent in the mix. They haven't lost a parent in the divorce. They have that certainty that my parents still love me. They're still here. My family is still here. It's just changed. And that helps immediately create some of that security and that certainty that they need.
Hearing you, just the word freedom keeps coming up for me, thinking that via the couple getting through a divorce, both parents become free to bring all of their attention to the child rather than having to focus so much on repairing the relationship, on the conflict in the relationship, and on the challenges they're having in their relationship.
Yes, exactly. And I think that that's, you know, I love that you're honing in on that idea of freedom because I think that often gets overlooked. And, you know, for a lot of people can bring about a lot of relief, even if there are feelings of grief or sadness or regret or, you know, fears, anxiety, all the fears, all the emotions that someone may experience, it doesn't mean that they aren't also feeling relief and a sense of freedom to be able to focus on their own healing, their own needs, and cultivating, you know, that relationship with their child. So absolutely, I think freedom I remember feeling that, you know, absolutely. I was like, you know, it took me a minute to realize that that's what I was feeling, but it was part of that relief that I experienced. And I hear that a lot with people going through divorce, that it's part of the mixed emotions. And that is definitely one that comes up. Yeah.
So on page 87 of your book, it says that co-parents have to get on the same page. So what does getting on the same page look like?
Yeah. So what I mean about getting on the same page is about collaborating, even in the midst of differences, and that it's so important for your child to see the two of you working together. And it allows them to feel free, speaking of freedom, you know, and that's really the key to, you know, feeling secure, is that they can feel free to be kids and to play and learn. And that's all we want them to do. And I bring this analogy at the beginning of the chapter as well, is you can think of your, you know, co-parenting team as if you were a sports team, where both of you bring in different skill sets, different values, you have different roles, but, you know, like a sports team, the goal is to win. And for co-parents, the goal is that their child wins, that their child is, you know, well-adjusted and healthy and happy. And most often, every parent wants that for their child. So I work with co-parents to create sort of this foundational agreement, which is based on this shared value of raising a healthy, well-adjusted, and resilient kid. And that can help them move forward in creating, you know, decisions that are more child-centered and really prioritize the needs of the kids, and helps them move from my way is best, or the anxiety and the fear that can really get in the way of focusing on what is best for kids. So getting on the same page is talking about where our values still overlap, where are they different, but how do we talk to our child about the differences so that they don't feel burdened, or they don't feel like they're stuck in the middle, or the conflict that can come from it. And actually, these differences can be opportunities for learning for our kids. You know, it's the real world out there, is that people have different values. There are different ways of, you know, talking about boundaries and things like that. And so we can use this as teachable moments where we help our kid, you know, understand that it can be confusing, but also help them learn, you know, valuable skills such as flexibility or critical thinking, or, you know, how to, you know, think through a problem. And this way, they actually build more resiliency to handle, you know, challenging situations. And so, you know, the idea of getting on the same page is about helping your child really learn also about collaboration and helping them, you know, move through challenging situations so that they really feel and grow into more resilient humans. So yeah, I think collaboration is sort of one of the key factors. That's why it's one of my C's, that can help a child feel like they still have that safe haven and that secure foundation to rely on.
I like that, because during much of this interview, I was debating, you know, what do we call like ex-partners, ex-spouses, or we're using the term co-parents, but you just brought up team. You're a parenting team and you want to play the same game of having your child win. So I love
yes.
that. And you can not be a couple, but you can be a team.
Yeah, you don't have to be friends. You don't have to, you know, like each other, but you can be on the same team for the ultimate goal of your child winning.
And you just mentioned a lot of qualities that we want to cultivate in a kid, because we've been talking about secure attachment. But what I just heard from you is we want to create a healthy, well-adjusted, and resilient kid who is capable of being flexible and have critical thinking and collaborative problem solving.
Yeah.
I love that list.
And fundamentally, when a kid has secure attachment, they can be more resilient and handle the normal ups and downs that life hands them. And so it isn't that we avoid challenging situations to protect our kids, but we help them move through it. And that's how they develop a sense of confidence and ability to be flexible through difficult situations like a divorce. So helping them understand their feelings and the confusions and all the changes and all of that is what they need to be able to grow into humans that can live in the reality of the world. So I always say fighting for consistency or fighting for your co-parent to be just like you and to parent exactly like you or to have all the same values. And that's not actually what's going to create a secure kid. It's, you know, collaborating through it, being united front, not throwing your, you know, your co-parent under the bus and really being this team and working together.
I love that. The best parents don't avoid challenging situations. They help their children move through them. And, you know, let's just say, despite my best efforts, I don't feel I'm building security with my child. Do you recommend, even for co-parents, separated, divorced couples, to do therapy together?
Yes, of course. I'm a parenting therapist, so I'm going to say yes, resounding yes. I think that if co-parents can go to co-parenting therapy, it's one of the best gifts that you can offer your child because you're going to learn how to be in this relationship. And that's one of the fundamental things about my book is I want to teach people how to do this, not just what to do and what not to do. Because sometimes what I find is that you can, you know what not to do, but you don't know how, you know. And so going to a co-parenting therapist, someone who specializes, or a co-parenting coach, someone who specializes in this kind of relationship, they can help you navigate this kind of relationship. So yeah, I do recommend it. It's can be very helpful. And most importantly, it's great for the kids. They'll thank you for it later on in life.
So as we're winding down, let's just talk really quickly about when new partners enter the equation. So what about when the team of co-parents do start seeing other people? How do you recommend navigating that change?
Well, there are different stages of this, the dating process, right? There's the beginning where, you know, I find that a lot of people enter into this like, wow, I'm free. I can explore myself, my sexuality. And so all that is really important and really good. You just don't want to parade that in front of your kid because that can be destabilizing, it can be confusing. It can, you know, make them feel like that, you know, they don't matter and that it's more about you and other people. And if, let's say, it does last for, you know, a couple of months, and if they're being introduced too early, and if you decide to end that relationship, it's now another relationship that the child has to go through leaving. So that can be hard too. So what I recommend is really taking the time to get to know your partner, your new partner, so that you really know whether or not they're good for you, good for your child, and good for the co-parenting system. You want someone who is a supporter, not a divider. So, you know, you want to make sure that you're checking off a lot of the green flags. And I have that, you know, some of these in the book, but it takes time, right? And also you want to make sure that you're fully healed from your past relationship with your co-parent so that you can really enter into a new relationship without, you know, complications and complicated feelings and all that. But most importantly, it's really about keeping that separate at the beginning from your child so that they don't have to, you know, be part of that. You know, we're modeling this, especially for teenagers and adolescents. They're watching, they're learning about their own dating experiences. And so we want to model sort of what we might be talking to them about. So if you've got lots of, you know, girlfriends or boyfriends coming and you're like, you know, you want to get to know somebody really well before, they're like, this is conflictual information here. You know, so I think that we want to really allow our child to not have to deal with your dating life until that person is going to stick around for a while.
Yeah, I like that for so many reasons. And one that really ties into what we were talking about before is that this divorce can be an opportunity. And this is an opportunity to model what it means to enter into a new relationship, what it means to, you know, date in a responsible way and manner, which, you know, a kid with two parents that haven't gotten divorced doesn't have that option.
Exactly. And they get, so once you do introduce someone who is good for you, so it can be an opportunity for you as well as how you model for your kids. So the first opportunity is I can now, through my own healing and learning, understand what I really need in love, what I really need to feel safe and secure. And I always, you know, I like to talk about this, you know, phase of people's lives when they're dating is it's an opportunity to learn more about yourself and how you can start to voice your own needs and not to re, create the same unhealthy patterns that may have been in past relationships. And so, you know, dating is an opportunity to understand, what are my boundaries? Oh, that's a no. Okay, I'm leaving that one so I can find the yes. And so dating can be an opportunity for you. And again, that's yours. That's in the adult world. Your kids don't need to be part of that. And then an opportunity for your kids to see healthy love when that does happen, where they see two adults interacting in a way that is secure, that is about, you know, mutuality. That is the new opportunity that once, you know, you enter into a healthier relationship, they get to have a different model of marriage or partnership.
I love that. Well, thank you so much, Arisha Smolarski, for coming onto the show. I feel so hopeful, like so promising. I think for divorce, you know, a lot of people think it's the end of their life. It's the worst thing that could ever possibly happen to them. But I just feel so warm and hopeful based on everything I'm hearing from you of how, what an opportunity it can be, not just for a new relationship with your child, but for healing and growth and new things, and to have that freedom to work on yourself and work on your child.
Yes, absolutely.
So I do have to close out by asking the question I ask all of my guests, which is, what do you wish everyone knew about love?
So love is about showing up fully, emotionally, mentally, and physically for yourself, as well as for the other person, if that's your partner or your child. And there's a quote that I want to share that I love by Bell Hooks, who says, learning how to be free is the first step to learning love.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Love is about showing up fully. Well, yes. Thank you so much for showing up to this podcast, for taking time out of your very busy day to come on and share your presence with me. It's so appreciated. Arisha Smolarski, the author of Cooperative Co-Parenting for Secure Kids, the Attachment Theory Guide to Raising Kids in Two Homes. And for our listeners who want to learn more about you, how can they find you?
You can find me on Instagram at Cooperative Co-Parenting, or on Facebook, Cooperative Co-Parenting, or my website, which is my full name, arishasmolarski.com. I hope to hear from you and see you in the social space.
Wonderful. Cooperative Co-Parenting. Now you know where to go, who to find if that's where you are in your life. So thank you so much, Arisha. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Zach.
Wow. What an incredible interview. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you remember all the valuable lessons that Arisha shared with us today, including, you can tell your child the best thing to come out of your marriage is them. In working with your ex-partner, it's not about who is right or wrong. It's about how you can parent together and work together as a team. Focusing on your partner is focusing on the past. Divorce can be an opportunity to repair the ruptured connections that happened during the marriage and focus on your child rather than the conflict that was happening. Bringing in quality time, connection, emotional attunement, and holding space for emotions are key in building secure attachment in your child. And remember, the six C's of cooperative co-parenting: commitment, collaboration, clarity, consistency, connection, and community. The best parents don't avoid challenging situations. They help their child move through them. And love is about showing up fully. Being there is enough, but you have to be there. And remember, you are perfect just the way you are. You are lovable, loving, and loved.
Thanks again for listening to the Learn to Love podcast. To learn more about the show and your host, head over to zachbeach.com or theheartcenter.com. You can also follow Zach on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.